Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work, enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikaitis.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here for episode 636 with Eric Papp. If you felt some frustration that you don't quite seem to be advancing on your most important priorities, well, Eric is bringing the goods to help you do just that. So you'll learn, one, the key question that cuts your tasks in half, two, the strategy that makes plans stick, and three, the key to starting off your week right. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items we've referenced, check out awesomeatyourjob.com/EP636. And if you're at awesomeatyourjob.com, check out some cool stuff like our Gold Nugget email summaries, which provide the summarized insights from Eric in an email you can read in about 2 or 3 minutes, as well as the access to the vault of every one of these Gold Nugget summaries of all 636 guests. We call those the Gold Nuggets at awesomeatyourjob.com. Now, here's Eric's story. Eric Papp has a successful history of delivering proven strategies to increase productivity and performance in a complex world. Before becoming the success he is today, Eric earned his BA from the University of Notre Dame. He founded Agape Leadership LLC, an intellectual capital firm focusing on leadership and sales for business performance, with the sole purpose of driving leaders and their teams to success. Eric is a successful author and public speaker since 2010, where he's worked with thousands of managers to aid teams toward their success. He's been evaluated as one of the top management trainers in North America for his expertise in leadership effectiveness. His books, Leadership by Choice and Three Values of Being an Effective Person, published by John Wiley & Sons, are both top sellers and recognized for their unique impact on the business world. Eric currently lives in Tampa, Florida with his wife, Brianne, and their daughter, Eliana. In his spare time, Eric frequents his local church, engages the community, and practices the kettlebell. Big thanks to Eric for sharing his wisdom with us. Big thanks to our sponsors. Check them out. One sponsor to check out is Storyworth, who's offering $10 off your first purchase at storyworth.com/awesome. Whenever I'm thinking about meaningful Mother's Day gifts, Storyworth leaps to mind. Storyworth is an online service that makes it fun and easy to write an entire book of life memories and preserve them for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a single life-related question that you pick from their collection, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done? I have personally loved the prompts so much that I have refreshed their questions page many times. All they have to do is reply with their story. After a year, Storyworth compiles those stories, memories, and even photos into a beautiful hardcover book to provide a valued keepsake. Families love Storyworth so much, they've got 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot with millions of stories preserved. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. And right now, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/awesome. That's storyworth.com/awesome for $10 off your first purchase. Here is Eric. Eric, thanks for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Hey, Pete, thanks for having me.
Well, I am excited to dig into your wisdom. And I know one thing you're excited about is the kettlebell. Yeah, I like your shirt. Could you read it for the audience who's listening?
Oh, man. It says, I got a fever and the only prescription is more kettlebell, which, of course, is a play on the SNL skit with Will Ferrell, where he's talking about more cowbell, you know?
That's right. That's right. And what do you love about the kettlebell? And what should we know if we're at home and not going into the gym about kettlebell workouts?
Oh, man. It combines all three: strength, endurance, and flexibility. And it is probably one of the most effective pieces of equipment, bar none. Kettlebell swings to build endurance and flexibility, Turkish get-ups to build overall strength. And it's incredible in terms of, you know, you do 10, 20 minutes and the return on it on time is phenomenal.
Ooh, now you got my attention. The return in terms of energy, in terms of strength, they're feeling amazing. What kind of return are we talking about?
Yeah, all the above. In terms of returning, you know, and they've done some studies, like when someone's doing the kettlebell swing based upon how many, you know, your metabolic rate and all this stuff, it's like equivalent to like running like a 6 minute mile. And then one of the great things, obviously, in the situation that we're in now is you can do it from the comforts of your own home. And that's also, by the time it takes you to go in your car and go to the gym and come back, you can already be done with your training.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I like effective. I like returns. And we're talking about just that. Productivity and better thinking versus more effort is a title of one of your keynotes. That sounds right up our alley. So tell us, what's the big idea there?
Yeah, better thinking versus more effort. You know, I think so often than not, as knowledge workers, and especially being here in America, there's always a pressure to do more, get in there early, stay later, climb the ladder. And that is good in a sense. And even for companies too, right? Oh, take on more projects. Let's do more initiatives. Let's get more, you know, joint ventures going. And that can be good to some degree, but then also it breeds a lot of complexity. It breeds a lot of, okay, we got our hand in a lot of different things. What are we really focused on? What are we really moving the needle? And better thinking is really taking about, you know, taking a step back and identifying the two or three projects that we can really move the mile, as opposed to trying to move 100 things an inch. And that's really what it comes down to, is to be able to subtract and to simplify and then get to a higher level of performance or productivity.
That sounds great. And so by doing better thinking, you're able to exert less effort and get similar or superior results. Could you paint a picture of that for us? Maybe the case of a particular person or client or study, like just how much is possible if we go down this route?
So on a macro level, on a company personal level that everybody knows, Apple, Steve Jobs, right? The listeners out there, probably 70-80% of your listeners have some form of Apple product, whether it's an iPhone or MacBook Pro, whatever it is. Steve Jobs is in a sense forced out of his own company that he creates. He comes back right around 1996, 1997 in that time frame. Apple is just on the ropes. And once again, they were trying to do too much. They had their hand in everything, scanners, printers, you name it. And he comes back and a family friend asks him, they said, Steve, what desktop computer should we buy? You know, you've got 17 of them that Apple offers. And he says, shoot, I don't even know. So he cut down all the desktop computers and only did one. He says, okay, we're going to cut everything out, all the desktop, we're just going to produce one. He really did a great example of better thinking versus more effort. And it requires that ability to take a step back to really to do the hard thinking. And that's a lot of times what we don't want to do, because we want the quick fix. We want to just kind of stay busy. And then that kind of consumes us, consumes our time. So, and then look what happened to Apple. And I mean, if you had stock, if you bought Apple stock, you know, in the early, 2000s or even late 1990s, I mean, it's incredible. My father-in-law had Apple stock. He still does. It's just mind-boggling the return he's made on that. And that, a large part, comes to Steve Jobs coming back, applying better thinking versus more effort.
And that does resonate in terms of whether it's a business with their products or an individual with the to-do list and just what you can accomplish there.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, on a micro level, so a colleague of ours, right, James Clear, he wrote the book Atomic Habits. He started off 2011, 2012, just writing a newsletter. Would write one on Monday, I think, or write one on Thursday. Within the first year, he had, I want to say, around 100,000 subscribers. And then that's all he did. And I think he had a day job at the same time and then just kept building on that, then writes a book. And then his newsletter just went over 1 million subscribers. And it's absolutely mind-boggling, right? So that's a great testament to, okay, sticking with the one thing and really getting good at that and staying the course.
All right. Well, so I'm into that. And tell us then, with this better thinking, are there some key questions in terms of identifying, you know, what is the stuff that makes the impact and what is the stuff that we should cut?
First thing I look at is subtraction, right? One of the questions to ask ourselves is, hey, if I stop doing this, would anything happen? Would anybody notice? Because a lot of times we do things out of obligation, or we do things because, oh, that's what the person did before me, or, oh, that's what I've always done. So that's a great question to ask ourselves. If I stop doing this or these activities, what's the impact? And a lot of times there's not an impact. And so that's a great way, because we want to start to allow ourselves that room, that space. It's kind of like, I think it was Claude Bristol that said, you know, it's the space between the notes that creates the music. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need more of that ability to not fill our day up with everything and anything, because we really need, things are going to come up as they naturally do, but also we need that time to just go in for a walk, that thinking time to take a step back. And by not filling our calendar up and everything, it allows that room for us to really start to process and analyze, okay, these projects, are they really important? You know, are we really making progress, or are we just kind of going through the motions? So the first part I would say is to subtract. Second part would be to really then look at is to simplify and to see, okay, of all the complexity, how can we make this simpler? You know, how can we make this easier? How can we reduce the friction to get the result that we want?
Yes, I love that. And, you know, that's intriguing in terms of, would anybody notice if I stopped doing this? I guess, how do you get the answer to that? One, you could just try it. Try, stop doing it, yeah, and see if anyone reaches out to you. Yeah, other ways you recommend in terms of, I think if you're in organizations and collaborating with folks, there could be some resistance in terms of, well, this is just what we do. This is what we've always done. Or mm-hmm. this is how this works. That is the process. So any thoughts on how, when it's, there's other stakeholders and people in the mix, you interact with them to get things moving?
I use a couple tools that I created. One, the effectiveness process. Another tool called organize and clarify your thinking to really get the goal, impact, and focus down. Because a lot of times in organizations, people just launch into projects and they don't know what's the desired outcome. They don't know what success looks like. They don't know what's the time involved. Who else can we collaborate with? Things that you think are basic. And then the person gets tasked with something and then they're not fully doing it. And then the manager gets upset or the director gets upset. That's where we get back to, you know, like I was saying earlier, moving 100 things an inch. So I think, you know, right from the start of it is for all of us, you know, to spend more time in the asking ourselves the questions, okay, what's my desired outcome? What does success look like? What's the impact if I do this? What's the impact if I don't do this? And then do I have the bandwidth right now to carry this out? What level of a priority is this for me? Is this a top three, or is this not, you know, just a good idea? Because the key thing we always have to remember as human beings is we will always generate more ideas than there is the ability and our capacity to execute them. And that is where I see kind of the downfall. Even as entrepreneurs, you know, managers, it doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur or it doesn't matter if you're inside of a company, but, you know, we'll always have good ideas, but always remember that our capacity to execute all them, we don't have that. And so we really have to be diligent of selecting just a few and then really going deep with what we've selected.
And so then we zeroed in on what to eliminate. And then I'd like to get some indicators then on, let's just imagine, okay, we had 100 ideas or there's 100 things vying for our attention. And hey, great job. We successfully eliminated half of them, which is cool. And so we are twice as clear as we were before. Nonetheless, how do you recommend that we zero in from, I guess, the semifinalists to those top three?
Yeah, great question. And it goes with, what is our desired future? You know, what's the future that we're living into? At any point in our lives, we're always thinking we're either in three different mindsets. You know, we're in the past, we're like, oh man, 2019 was such a great year and we were mm-hmm. gathering and we did this and our company did this, or I, you know, or we are in the present. Okay, what am I doing right now? What's important right now? You know, that acronym WIN, what's important now? Or we're in the future. We're thinking about, hey, where do I want to be? And sometimes we have to be very mindful of how we're thinking, because sometimes we're dominated by the past. We're, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, this is so bad. I can't, you know, I wish it was this time. I wish it was. And so asking ourselves, okay, what's the desired future that I want? And then just backtracking it, you know, it's okay, what's the desired future? And then now what are the projects that I think will get us there? And a lot of times we overestimate what we can do in a day, but yet we underestimate what we can do in a year.
Yep. I think that's true. And well, talking about those timeline horizons with the day and the year, you've got something you've created called the weekly strategy sheet. Tell us, how do we think about that and use it to plan priorities?
Yeah. So often than not, where this kind of came from, Pete, is when you ask people, you would say like, hey, what'd you do last week? Oh, they'd look at you and it's kind of like, you know, they really couldn't give a definitive answer. It was like, oh, I got a lot of emails done. I was in a lot of meetings. And so this is really to give people a high level overview, a high level strategy of, okay, what's most important this week? You know, well, first off, there's three parts. It's past, present, and future. And the idea is, okay, we celebrate our past, we connect with our present here, and then we commit to the future. And so the idea is, over time, is as we're planning our weeks, is to see some synergy between the past, present, and future. You know, we identify, so in the past, celebrate the past. Okay, great. What are the top three or five accomplishments I accomplished last week that were very meaningful to me in my business, you know, or in my role? Okay, great. I'm going to list them down, because that's going to give us confidence. Our confidence comes from seeing the progress and what matters most to us. And whether that's personal or professional. So great, we can see that. When you write it down, it helps us keep moving forward. But a lot of times in our culture, we don't. We focus on where we are and where we want to go. And I call that, you got to be careful, because that's kind of frustrationville, right? That's comparison. That's, oh man, well, I see this person on social media. Oh, I see this. So I get people to take a look back and to see all the progress that they're making and have this on a weekly basis. And then the middle part then is we're looking to really kind of connect with the present. Okay, what are my top three weekly priorities this week? If everything goes to, you know, HE double hockey sticks, what's the three most important things I want to get done, I want to accomplish? And then the future, you know, what, and I the future plan it, I use the OKR method, objective and key results, and the what do you want to accomplish and how you're going to get it done. And like I said, the whole idea of using the weekly strategy sheet, it takes under 20 minutes to plan it out, but is so important because a lot of times as knowledge workers, we don't plan our weeks. We just go from one week to the next and we kind of kid ourselves that, oh, something will be different, or, oh, this will turn around. But if we don't really get a handle on the planning aspect, then the execution kind of falls short.
And so I'm curious, so we got the weekly strategy sheet, and so then you can reference it at the end of the week. It's written, it's there, you see, hey, this is what I accomplished. That's cool. And you zero in on those top three priorities. How do you think about it in terms of, I guess, scheduling or calendaring or putting time against those things within the week?
Well, you gotta have a day where you spend time to plan. You know, having a planning day. I like to do mine on a Friday. Sometimes I do it on a Thursday, you know, late afternoon. But when you have that time to really devote to the planning, and you're not trying to fill up your week either. You're just saying, okay, what are the three most important things? And also too, those three most important things, you might get those done in 2 days, and that might very well be, you know, and that's okay. But it's really to give you a better sense of clarity and organization.
So within that planning time, and so it sounds like this isn't a 10-minute operation, but it's a bit more in depth. What are you doing with that planning time?
Yeah, you're just going from left to right, you know, past, present, and future. So I've got my weekly strategy sheet. It's sitting right here on my desktop. And this is the week of January 4th through the 8th. And boom, okay, I celebrate the past. I write down, you know, my top five accomplishments. And I mix in one personal or two personal in there as well. And then I check in with the present. What are my top three weekly priorities? And then what's for the future, my objective and key results. And that can change as well. But you'll see, you know, when you ask people, hey, do you plan your week? A lot of people don't. And then some people that do kind of quickly plan their week. The more that we spend time planning our week and really being diligent about that, A, you'll get better at it. And B, you'll be able to get your priorities done and things done with a lot greater intention. And that's the kind of the cool thing. And you'll actually have more time. You know, you'll be accomplishing more and you'll have more time when things come up, or to that you'll be more able to be more flexible. You know, I think one of the things it gives people is it helps relieve some of this, you know, the pressure of time that a lot of people are faced with nowadays.
So you're maybe doing an hour with the weekly strategy sheet planning process, or roughly how long are you putting in there?
Yeah, about, I'd say it's about an hour. I mean, I'll go, you know, what I'll do is I'll take two cracks at it. I'll look at it Friday, and then I might look at it again on Monday and just make some adjustments just to make sure that, okay, I'm on track for this week. But it really gives me that structure, and it really gives me the guidance, because the other thing too is, as knowledge workers, our confidence is, we have to protect that, right? And so if we know as human beings, if I'm making progress, that I'm feeling good about myself. And so that's so important. And knowing that I'm progressing towards where I want to go. And so by doing this, it really helps us with that. So yeah, it's about, you know, an hour, or some people have done it under an hour. I'm typically around that, depending upon how detail I get with it.
And so you're saying that that hour you spend there ends up saving significantly more than 1 hour during the course of executing the week.
Tremendously. Yeah. And I don't remember who said or where I read it, but it was something like, for every minute you spend planning, it gives you 10 additional minutes, or you save 10 additional minutes or something like that. So yeah, it's kind of like that 10-to-1 ratio. Yeah. And so that's why the planning is so important. And, you know, you get better at it too as you go on. A lot of times we just start our day very reactive, right? When I say reactive, we just start our day, we watch the news, listen to the news, or we start our day reading emails, checking emails. And so that we're not really proactive. We're just responding to whatever's in our inbox, whatever's most pressing. And often what's a priority gets masked with you know, 100 different other things.
And if folks have a hard time letting go, because I think what could be perhaps a mistake, and you tell me about the biggest mistakes you see when folks are trying to manage their time, is you say, okay, these are the really critical priorities. And so we kind of go after those, but we don't really subtract, you know, we don't really let go of the other things. And then we're just sort of extra stressed because it's like, well, no, I really identified and I'm totally clear that these things are critical, but I'm still doing everything else. So if there's an emotional hurdle and or a hump or resistance, how do you recommend we get through that?
You're spot on, Pete. It's absolutely right. Because I'll see people like, oh, I need more time, or, oh yeah, like I'll recommend a book or something, like, oh, I don't even have time to read this and that. And it's like, you're not planning and you're not prioritizing. That's really what it comes down to, because you're trying to do everything and you're regarding everything as has the same level of importance when it doesn't. And so then you can't multiply your output and you can't leverage what you're doing. So one of the things I share with people is come at it with like a spirit of like experimentation. You know, experiment of like trial and error. A lot of times we want certainty as human beings. We want to know, hey, if I do this, it's going to give me this. Or if I don't do this, this will alleviate this problem. And so it's like, hey, just test it out, you know. And then also I share too the idea of when you give yourself less time, we tend to be more productive. A little story, a little side note on this. It's when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he was president, he had an advisor, Harry Hopkins. And Harry, due to some health issues and such, could only work 3 to 4 hours a day. However, he was one of the most effective advisors for FDR. Winston Churchill went so far to call him like Lord Heart of the Matter. And the reason why is, hey, he only had 3-4 hours. So then therefore it really caused him to think deliberately about, okay, what am I going to do in the time that I do have? Because there's that whole Parkinson's law, right? And work expands to fill the time necessary for its completion. So if we give ourselves 8 hours a day, we're going to fill it with 8 hours. If we give ourselves 10 hours, we're going to fill it with 10 hours. And so that's a very interesting thing. And you'll see this not only from a time standpoint, but you'll also see this from like a storage standpoint. Like when somebody has a house, you know, they went from like, let's say, 1,000-square-foot house to a 2,000-square-foot house. Well, over time, they're going to fill that house up with stuff. Why? Because they're just going to fill it up with stuff. You know, so it takes a deliberate level of discipline and just mindfulness too of, okay, hey, we don't want to be overcluttered. I don't want to be overwhelmed. Just because I have the capacity doesn't mean I need to buy more stuff. So that's kind of the idea on that. But yet somehow we end up shooting ourselves in the foot by just adding more and doing more.
All right. Thank you. And I know you've also zeroed in on some key habits of super achievers. Can you tell us what are they and how do we go about developing them?
Yeah. I'd say some of the habits of super achievers, number one is to get a real clear sense, and we've talked about this a little bit earlier, of what your future is, of what you know, knowing what it is that you want in your future. That's a key thing. The second thing I would say is knowing what are some of your unique talents. Super achievers are very good at knowing what their unique talents are and then spending time working on those talents. And then after a while, people take a step back. Wow, that's a master at work. Wow, that person's, they're at the top of their field. So that's a big thing is, okay, knowing what you want and then knowing your talents, what you're good at or what you like to do, and then really spending time learning more every day and getting better, making, you know, just getting 1% better, reading more, talking to people. And then when you take a step back, then you see, then you're kind of regarded as like a super achiever. People are like, wow, that person, you know, look at the gains they've made. And it's not anything that they're extraordinary. In some cases, I mean, it's the talent is there already, but other cases it's the talent has been cultivated, you know, over and over. It's kind of like a water dropping on a stone. It's just that over and over and over, that repetitive nature, eventually it changes the stone and it forms the stone into something unique.
Well, Eric, tell me anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
No, I think we're right on track. We're doing great.
Okay. Well, could you share a favorite quote, something you find inspiring?
Well, one of them I already mentioned, it's a quote that's just, it's been top of mind. You know, our capacity to generate ideas will always be greater than our ability to execute.
Okay. And a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
A lot of what I'm saying is in alignment with Richard Koch, his idea on the 80-20 principle. And what I'm talking about is kind of, you know, from Pareto and going back and looking at that. So a lot of that is, you know, if somebody wants to explore more, go deeper into being able to identify priorities and such. So that'd be good to look at.
Yeah, that is a great one. And I think a lot of people have heard about the 80-20 rule, but he's just like, you're not taking it nearly far enough. Like, that's the theme right. that I think that hits over and over again. Yeah. Each chapter is like, all right, man, you got it. And how about a favorite tool, something you use to be awesome at your job?
I would say a notebook that I have. I've got the priority planner that I use. It's something I created. It's in its third edition. And this keeps me focused because it's the way I've created. It's three wins from yesterday. So it causes me every day to write down what were my accomplishments from the exact day before. So this helps keep my confidence high. And that's one of the top things we need to protect as a knowledge worker. And then it says, you know, three priorities for today. So it's asking me, okay, what are my three priorities? And sometimes I just only identify one or two. And then that way I feel great about accomplishing that. And the next part, I have stay curious, stay creative. I ask questions throughout the day. I think that's important too, is write down questions. When questions come up, just write them down. If you don't know the answer to them, because a lot of times we get stuck with, oh, I don't know how to figure that out. Oh, and it's very easy to kind of throw up our hands or say, oh, that's not, you know, that's somebody else's responsibility. Or that's somebody else's department. But just write down a question, because there's a great chance that you just kind of sit with it. You'll get the idea. Will come to you later on.
And any other favorite habits for you personally?
Spending time taking care of yourself physically, whether it's going for a walk. I go for occasionally morning walks. I also cycle. I became, you know, I've got the Peloton here. So cycling, and that's great because it's low impact on the knees. And then obviously the kettlebell. So alternating between cardio and strength. So exercise is such an important part, and not so much just from like a vanity standpoint, but from so much from a, it clears your mind. It's, I can't tell you, Pete, how many times where I've just gone for a walk or I've gone on a bike ride and then I'll come back with like three great ideas that I'll write down, you know, just some different things or an email to ask somebody or a question. And then spending time in scripture with the Bible, just reading some of the New Testament. I do a little thing called Lectio Divina, and I'll read a little small passage of the New Testament and then just kind of just ask questions, just journal from there. And then also every day in the morning, I usually just start to write. I just kind of start typing or writing just to kind of empty, purge all the stuff in my head, whatever it is. You know, it might be questions, it might be concerns, it might be what I'm excited about, just whatever it is, because I find that to be a wonderful clearing process so I can start my day being in the present moment.
And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate with folks? They quote it back to you frequently?
Well, I would say preparation begets confidence. And that comes from planning your day, right? When you're prepared, when you plan your day, kind of know where you want to go. Then when things do come up, then you have the flexibility to adapt. Oh, here's something that I say, you know, hey, blessed are the flexible, for they shall never be bent out of shape.
All right.
and I think 2020, right, was a great reminder that we all had to be flexibility. It's teaching us a lesson in flexibility and also a lesson in resiliency. I think resiliency is such a wonderful, wonderful quality to have, whether you're an entrepreneur or a manager, the capacity to overcome difficulties quickly. Because there were a lot of challenges that we experienced, and there's a lot of challenges that we're going to continue to experience as well.
And if folks have questions, they want to learn more, get in touch, where would you point them?
My website, ericpapp.com. I've got some videos on there. The weekly strategy sheet is on there, so they can download that for free. And they'll get the PDF version of that. And that's just ericpapp.com.
And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks looking to be awesome at their jobs?
Hey, we're starting off the year here in January. Ask yourself, how is this year going to be different for you? Not just from, you know, what are you going to do that's going to be different? You know, how are you going to get to your goals? How is it going to be different? And then, you know, when you've got that plan, work it and get your outcome that you want.
All right, Eric, this has been a treat. I wish you lots of luck and success in your productivity and adventures and priorities, and keep on rocking.
Hey, thanks, Pete. It's been great, man. And thank you for doing what you do. I mean, having this, doing over, what is this, episode 600 and something? I mean, that's incredible, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a lot. So that's great. We need more of this in the world.
I really like Eric's take on preparation begets confidence. When you take the time to make that weekly strategy sheet, you just have all the more confidence going into the week. And if you think, oh, I don't know if I have what it takes to resist the temptations, the distractions, etc., having that tool at your side, I think really does make a world of difference for reclaiming the focus. It's hard to be distracted from something, nay, impossible, if you haven't defined what it is you're going for. and thus by definition, what are those distractions? So big thanks to Eric. Again, those show notes, the transcript, the links to items we've referenced are at awesomeatyourjob.com/EP636. And I hope to catch you next time. Peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.